The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's great to be back here with you in our cozy little studio at Edstone. It's still nice and quiet around here with most of our people gone away skiing in the Alps. I talked a little bit about that yesterday on the program, the teen fundraiser. They've had several, in fact, the most recent one being the sale of the firewood, chopping down some oak trees, and then not all of them, I think more pruning, I guess, more than anything, and then making about 4,000 pounds, and that allowed for 35 of our young people, our students, some young couples, a couple of families to go skiing yesterday, and they continue. There's a shot there if you're watching the YouTube stream. That happens to be my son, 17 years of age, skiing for the first time, and there he goes. At least he didn't fall. He's a little tentative, but I would imagine by day three, he'll be zipping down the hills just like some of the others. I think there's others following him here in just a second. But they were able to rent their own facility, a big home with all kinds of rooms. So they're scattered about this lodge, I guess you could call it, and they have their own kitchen facilities. So it's kind of like a robber's cave experience, and they get to have two of them this year instead of just the one. There you see some of the still shots of those who attended the event or who are attending the event in Switzerland. It continues through tomorrow. They make their way back on Thursday, and then we'll see them, I think, on Friday afternoon. So that's very exciting to see. One of our parents, by the way, was telling us that he wouldn't have been able to send his two children to this activity were it not for the fact that it was subsidized by the teen fund. So those afternoons at Tesco, bagging groceries for people and taking on tips, and then cutting wood and arranging to sell wood to the locals, it's certainly paid off in a very memorable way. Well, coming up on today's program, if we have time, I do have a fair bit that I've tried to squeeze into the first segment here, but if we have time, I will continue on with our study of some of those foundational chapters in Genesis, the opening chapters of the Holy Bible. For this segment, however, I want to start by reading a headline to you, and I want you to think about this headline. It comes from the Wall Street Journal just a couple of days ago. It says, U.S. sanctions halt work on Russia's gas pipeline to Europe. So the United States sanctions a bill President Trump signed. Because of that, I think it happened last Friday. Because of that, it effectively, at least for the time being, at least right now, it shut down this Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline between Russia and Germany. This is all part of the temporary resurgence that we're now seeing. That's astounding, really, to think one signature coming from a U.S. president, and it shuts down this 1,700-mile project. Now, I think 1,500 miles of it are already finished. There's just the 200 miles to go, and Russia's saying, we're going to finish this, never mind what the U.S. has done. But here it comes to a screeching halt, and I'll explain why in just a minute. First, to just give you some background, Germany and Russia, they started looking into this project, the second Nord Stream, I think back in 2011, and then the companies involved in it signed an agreement in the middle of 2015, and then construction began last year. I guess it was May of 2018. That's the Nord Stream 2. The Nord Stream 1, that's the earlier pipeline, again, between Russia and Germany. That was built during the Obama presidency. And that pipeline provides enough fuel for Germany, but for Russia to be able to provide fuel for all of Western Europe, they needed greater capacity. They needed another pipeline. They needed Nord Stream 2. So as I say, Nord Stream 1, that's completed during the Obama years. And then now you have number 2. And of course, the thing that really helps Russia and Germany is that by creating this, it bypasses Poland and Ukraine, nations that, well, in the case of Ukraine, Russia and Ukraine, they don't exactly get along. So it hurts Ukraine, this deal. And of course, President Trump has made no secret of the fact that he's unhappy with it as well, because the U.S. can provide Europe with gas. But last Friday, with the stroke of a pen, the President of the United States, he signs into law this bill that would put heavy sanctions on any company working on this pipeline. And the reason why it shut down immediately is because the Swiss company that was laying the pipes down just walked away from it immediately, because they don't want to risk sanctions. They've got a lot of U.S. interests as well. This is from the EU Observer. It says the U.S. measures called for asset freezes against those engaged in pipelaying for the construction of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline project. It says that meant the U.S. would have seized Allseas ships. Allseas is the company. If they would have continued laying the pipe, the U.S. would have seized their ships. And if they entered American waters after completing the Russian pipe, or it would have done that if, it says it would have also seized the firm's office in Houston, Texas, and barred it from working in the U.S. for years. So it was serious. these were heavy sanctions. And Allseas walked away from it right away, the moment that it was signed. Here's Deutsche Welle explaining some of these events from the past few days. Clip one.
The sanctions target companies involved in the almost 10 billion euro project to double the pipeline capacity carrying Russian natural gas to Europe's leading economy, Germany. Most of that pipeline has been completed. Allseas, the company building the unfinished section through Danish territorial waters, announced it was halting its work in anticipation of the new law. Washington had made it clear in advance that non-compliance would have consequences.
You know, Senator Cruz, who's the sponsor of the bill, wrote a letter to the CEO of Allseas today, basically saying as soon as this bill is signed into law, you're out of compliance and you are subject to sanctions. So it's a hot topic.
The U.S. move has angered Germany, a longtime ally. Berlin rejects the idea that Washington can legally impose sanctions on third parties.
That's from Deutsche Welle. Now, it's angered a lot of countries. Germany, certainly. Russia, as we'll see here in just a second. This, again, from the EU Observer. It says Nord Stream 2, this has been a controversial project all across Europe. It has long divided the EU as well as the West more broadly on strategic grounds. It would enable Russia to pump almost all of its EU gas exports via Germany, allowing the Kremlin to cut off Poland, the Baltic states, or Ukraine, it says, for political reasons. It says it was seen as a betrayal in Eastern Europe, where it has been compared to the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact. It says a Nazi-Soviet-era deal to carve up the region. Well, you're familiar with some of that history. We've talked about that before. But then it quotes from the U.S. ambassador, Richard Grenell, who he talked about some of the divisions in Europe on Saturday. And this is from Grenell. It says, we stand with the 15 European countries, the European Parliament, and the European Commission who have concerns over Nord Stream 2. Our position is pro-Europe, and many European diplomats are thanking us for this support. Germany was particularly surprised, this article says. Well, as you heard from the report, it actually angered Germany. Germany's very upset. And Germany's not the only one, as I say. Russia is angered by this as well. This is another short clip from that Deutsche Welle report, clip two.
Despite the anger in Berlin, Germany is not planning any action against Washington. That's not the case with Russia, the other partner in the pipeline. President Vladimir Putin has threatened retaliation.
So you have Russia threatening retaliation for this and assuring the world that we're going to finish this somehow anyway. The Wall Street Journal, that's the one I gave you the headline from. It says Russia's foreign ministry and said Saturday that Washington sanctions wouldn't stymie Russia's economic projects and Moscow would move ahead with the natural gas pipeline regardless of U.S.'s intended obstacles. It says in a statement, the Russia officials accused Washington of seeking to force its pricey liquefied gas on Europe and stall the development of Europe's economy while undermining its ability to compete. So they're saying, well, you're just looking out for your own interest. And to some degree, that's true. President Trump does want to open up business for American oil suppliers or gas, natural gas. And Russia's calling out the United States. But doesn't, as Richard pointed out earlier today, doesn't this demonstrate just how powerful and effective a siege, an economic siege, can be? Here's the United States of America. While it still has some power, there's certainly a temporary resurgence. But here's President Trump saying, if you don't pull out of this deal, then we're going to slap sanctions on you. And as we know from Bible prophecy, this is a power that other nations are going to use as well. Now, for them, it's going to take a coalition of sorts. And we see that from Isaiah 23. Germany, as angered as Germany is by this, they're looking at the power of the United States saying, we want that kind of power. We want to be able, in some ways, they've had it on, in smaller ways, the way that they've imposed their will on Greece and so on. But still, they're looking at this saying, this is the kind of power that we want. And we know from Bible prophecy, this is the kind of power that Europe will soon get. You think about some of the other effects of all of this or what will come from it. Surely this is going to strengthen the tie between Berlin and Moscow, and other nations for sure are taking note. You can only imagine what what kinds of things are being said behind closed doors by heads of state, by heads of government, about this particular U.S. president. Think of the contempt, the antipathy, and how much longer will it be before they exact their revenge. There's lots of takeaways from this story, but what an amazing development. And by the way, while we're on the subject of Russia and the United States, if he could choose between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, whom would Vladimir Putin prefer? Who do you think Vladimir Putin would want as a U.S. president? Given what we've seen, forget about what the liberal left-wing media says, but think about what we have seen in the last 3 years. President Trump supplying Ukraine with javelins, with military hardware, with which they can defend themselves against Russian aggression. And then here comes President Trump last week using his pen to stop the Nord Stream 2 project. Who's really the Russian stooge or the Russian agent? And yet you read from the media today, this is just from a few days ago, Washington Post, it says the concern they're talking about here is that President Trump would say that Ukraine, some of these corrupt figures in Ukraine were meddling in the election back in 2016, which they obviously were. Even the press reported on it back in 2017. Even Ukrainian officials admitted it. It resulted in Manafort getting sacked. In any event, here's the major media. They're still out there saying, well, how crazy for President Trump to keep talking about Ukraine interference. Never happened, never happened. It's only Russia, 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 Russia. It says the concern among senior White House officials that Putin helped fuel Trump's theories about Ukraine underscores longstanding fears inside the administration about the Russian president's ability to influence Trump's views. So he's still influencing Trump's views, apparently not on the Nord Stream 2 project. He's not having much success there. Or with funding the Ukrainian government, or supplying Ukraine with javelins. But here they won't let it go. They keep on with this same narrative. This narrative that started, in fact, it started before the election, way back in 2016. I sent this over to Sam this morning, this Politico piece. This is on December 12th of 2016. And given what we learned in the IG report just a few weeks ago, it's almost hilarious to go back and to read some of these very serious reports. Right around the election in 2016. Remember, it was Brennan who came out with this sham of a report that the Washington Post, the New York Times picked up on. I think it was December 9th of 2016. Russia meddled in the election, and now we know they actually helped Donald Trump. But this is from Politico. This was one of the early attempts to take down this president before he even was inaugurated. It says here, Hillary Clinton's top political advisor, John Podesta, said the campaign is supporting an effort by members of the Electoral College to request an intelligence briefing on foreign intervention in the presidential election. So the intelligence briefing, by this point, it was already being influenced by the Steele dossier. And the Electoral College vote was on December 19th of that year. So you'll remember that President Trump or Donald Trump's voted in on November 8th. Then to make it official, the Electoral College representatives, they get together for their vote, representing their constituents, and that was to happen on December 19th. This report on December 12th, the Clinton people, they wouldn't accept the results of the election, and so it was the Clinton people out there saying that the Electoral College should prevent Donald Trump from being president. This article says here, Podesta's statement is the first public statement from the Clinton campaign raising questions about the legitimacy of Donald Trump's victory. Now, keep in mind, the Clinton campaign funded the dossier. They paid Christopher Steele. They dug up dirt using Russian sources. Russia. And so they're calling into question the legitimacy of the election. This was the first attempt. There would be many. There would be many to follow. The Logan Act. Oh, the emoluments. He's crazy. There's this reason. He's being investigated. He's a Russian agent. It says two Democratic members of Congress have also suggested the Electoral College should take an active role in reassessing or stopping the Trump presidency. This is Politico. And it's referring to two members of Congress. One of them, Representative Jim Himes, a member of the House Intelligence Committee, told Politico on Monday that Trump is a potentially dangerous president. He had just been voted in 4 weeks previous to this. He's a potentially dangerous president? How would you even know if he's going to be dangerous? Well, because of the Steele dossier. Remember, he had been a Russian agent. They had been cultivating him for 5 years. That's the first line of the dossier. A potentially dangerous president. This is Politico. This is the Clinton campaign. These are Democrats in Congress. They're all in it together. It's all a coup, an orchestrated coup to begin with. This was the insurance policy in full swing. What was it? Peter Strzok texted to Lisa Page. He said, it's like an insurance policy in the unlikely event you die before you're 40. We need this. And he said in that same text, by the way, they were all in the office together with Andy McCabe, the deputy director of the FBI, talking about how unlikely it would be for the president to be voted, for Donald Trump to be voted in. But just in case, we've got to have the insurance policy. Anyway, back to this political report. It says, this is quoting the Democrat congressman, "It became clear to me last night that this man is not only unqualified to be president, he's a danger to the republic." See, Brennan was behind all the reports surfacing that the Russians helped Donald Trump. They tilted it in the favor of Trump. So he's illegitimate. And Trump was working in cahoots with Putin. This congressman, Himes, he says, I do think the Electoral College should choose someone other than Donald Trump to be president. This is in Politico, 4 weeks after the election, month and a half before the inauguration. He says that will lead to a fascinating legal issue, but I would rather have a legal problem, a constitutional legal problem, than to find out the White House was now the Kremlin's chief ally. Right, the Kremlin's chief ally just halted the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline project. A devastating blow to Russia and Germany, for that matter. Both of them. Well, you can see from these reports back in 2016, as I say, they had the insurance policy in motion. And ever since, we, as my father has said, we've gotten a hard look at what they're willing to do to seize power, to return to power. There was a great article yesterday or the day before at American Greatness, just chronicling all of this FBI misconduct, everything that's been revealed in the IG report, and there's more to come, as we know, with John Durham's investigation. But it makes a big point about the source for Christopher Steele, the one he relied upon primarily for all of the lies in his dossier. The FBI, as we now know from the IG report, the FBI interviewed this source for Christopher Steele sometime in the middle of January 2017 or the late part of January that year. So right around the time of the inauguration, the FBI says, okay, we have all this dirt on President Trump. Now let's just go talk to the source. And they did that. And what did they find out? The source says, well, that's not true. It was all hearsay. We were talking about it over a couple of beers in a pub. You notice how that keeps coming up too. All these things overheard in a pub or a restaurant. And I mean, if it makes Donald Trump look bad, the FBI will run with it for sure. Well, they interview this source and they find out that the dossier, which had just been on it had been published on BuzzFeed January 10th. And you know all about the CNN report, Jim Sciutto and Jake Tapper. These are very serious. It was tacked on to the intelligence briefing and presented to Donald Trump. They needed the hook, right? The media, they heard about it, the meeting between Comey and the president on January 6th. Then they ran with it. Then CNN reported on it. Then BuzzFeed said, well, hey, we'll just print the whole dossier. And then a week or two later, the FBI interviews the primary source for the dossier and find out that the whole thing is bogus. So now what do we do? This article says, January 2017, McCabe, Comey, Strzok, Page, they all find out that this is completely bogus. So what did they do? Well, it says here at American Greatness, the right answer would have been to admit to the court that Steele was an unreliable source who exaggerates and lies and put an end to spying on Americans in pursuit of the mirage of Trump's alleged collusion with Russia. That would have been the honest thing to do. okay, we've seen now that it can't be verified. We've seen now that it's bogus. We've seen now that it's hearsay upon hearsay upon hearsay. We see now it's packed with lies. So look, we got to go tell the court, the FISA court, that is. We've got to stop spying on Carter Page and others. We've got to do the right thing. It says, when presented one last opportunity to do the right thing, the FBI instead pushed harder for their now discredited hypothesis justifying the investigation. Peter Strzok had promised his lover, Lisa Page, he would save the country from Donald Trump. Given a choice between bringing the FBI back into the light of the Constitution or the darkness of blind hatred of Donald Trump, the conspirators chose darkness. It was at this precise moment that the FBI left behind any plausible deniability of mistake or sloppiness. From this point on, the FBI's participation in the Trump-Russia collusion, a hoax, became willful and intentional. Jim Comey will remember, he said it was recently. He said this recently because of the IG report. Well, there was a lot of sloppiness. There were quite a few mistakes made. But like this author at American Greatness brings out, once they found out that the sourcing for the dossier was flawed, once they found out they couldn't verify it at all, then they should have come clean. They should have stopped with this. Instead, they pushed harder. It says here, this is the FBI's darkest hour. The next time the FBI prepared a warrant renewal application, it misrepresented the interview to make it appear as though the source confirmed Steele's fairy tale. It wasn't a mistake. It was a deliberate defrauding of a court. And now even the FISA court has been forced to come out and to rebuke the FBI. The FBI director has said, we're making 40 policy changes to prevent this from happening again. The Inspector General's report says that there were 17 serious cases of misconduct, of lying, deceit. Andy McCabe, the former deputy director, he was on CNN with Wolf Blitzer just the other day, and listened to Blitzer grill this former FBI deputy, clip 3.
This is very serious misconduct on your watch.
Very serious, very serious. And I can tell you, Wolf, that everyone who I know, everyone in the FBI, anyone who reads that report is shocked and horrified by what they've seen in the recitation of the 17 errors. Shocked because we all believed, I certainly believe, that the procedures we had in place were enough to guarantee that accurate information was going to the court. And horrified because it cuts against one of our most fundamental duties, and that is to be perfectly accurate and truthful and complete with the court at all times.
The then FBI director, Jim Comey, he says it was sloppiness, but this wasn't just sloppiness. These were brutal mistakes, deliberate errors, concealments involving search warrant surveillance activities of an American citizen.
They were very, very serious mistakes. They come into basically two different categories. Things that they told the court, which were not consistent with what we knew in our own files, and facts that we left out that we should have told the court.
Why they even still have commentators like him on CNN? What an embarrassment. He was part of the problem. And now they trot him out like he's some expert. You'll hear him later, when asked, you know, what do you regret most? He could hardly answer it. He couldn't even think of an answer. This was all January of 2017. They were just reapplying for another warrant on Carter Page. I think that's January 20th, 2017. And then they had to do it 3 months later. So they kept right on lying. The lying actually got worse because everything, like the Attorney General has recently said, everything they kept turning up was exculpatory. So they kept lying and concealing certain things in front of the FISA judges to make sure they got the spying that they could. They had to be able to spy because they knew they could divine, don't you know? They could divine that there was evil in this administration, and they just needed to spy long enough to find it. And all those FISA warrants, that led to the Mueller investigation. May of 2017. Think about all the interrogations. Something like 500. 2,800 subpoenas. 500 search warrants. They got five. The Mueller investigators got 500 search warrants. Based upon this. What's now been exposed in the IG report. This author, this is Adam Mill at the American Greatness, by the way. He says, every one of those 500 search warrants must have been supported by an affidavit swearing the FBI had probable cause to suspect Trump was conspiring with Russia to affect the outcome of the 2016 election. Since we now know the FBI deceived the court in the Carter Page warrant applications at the dawn of the Trump-Russia collusion investigation, we have reason to wonder about the next 500 warrants issued in the same investigation. See, like this author brings out, the case was already dead before Mueller even got started, which brings to mind or to question, how did they justify these search warrants that went on for a year and a half further? There was no Russian collusion. The Steele dossier was already discredited by this point. And all the crimes, like we noted yesterday, all the crimes that they uncovered were either financial crimes or process crimes that were created by the investigation, essentially. Nothing having to do with Trump-Russia collusion. This author says here, remember when Roger Stone was dragged from his house at gunpoint to search for evidence of Russia collusion? That was one of 500 warrants executed. The probe terrorized its political enemies at a rate of approximately one warrant per business day. Now, we got into this some yesterday. One warrant per day. And it's all, and the IG report brings this out. Of course, the Democrats cried out. Look, they didn't find any evidence of political bias. But keep in mind, all of these warrants, the 500 warrants, the 2,800 subpoenas, all the interrogations, all the people that have been put in jail, it's all aimed in the direction of the Trump people. It's all aimed at Donald Trump and his administration. Roger Stone dragged from his house at gunpoint. It says even before Steele's primary subsource disavowed the entire smear against Trump, there had been signs, but the FBI wanted so badly to believe Trump was guilty that it didn't bother. It didn't bother taking note of these signs. It says the results of the interview, this is the interview with the source in January 2017, must have inspired panic and dread in the Russia collusion investigators. Steele's primary source told the FBI that he had not even seen what Steele fed to the FBI. He didn't even know what was in it. And then when he heard about it, because of BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed puts it out there for everyone to see. And then the primary source for the dossier says, what? He said this? He wrote this? The FBI took this and ran with it? Pretty amazing. The level of corruption. It says, thus, before Mueller had even been appointed, the FBI had reached a dead end. They went to the horse's mouth, Steele's primary subsource, only to find out that the source himself couldn't vouch for the information. Nevertheless, on May 17th, 2017, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein appointed Robert Mueller to investigate, quote, listen to this, to investigate any links and or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the campaign of President Donald Trump. Those were the parameters for the investigation, you, Mr. Mueller, and your team of left-wing Democrats, you are charged with the mission of finding any coordination between Trump and Russia. It says the Mueller investigation was never about investigating anything. Rosenstein's signature on the last Carter Page warrant extension application sealed his fate as a co-conspirator. No wonder he threatened congressional staffers to keep his secret safe. See, it was all a carefully orchestrated cover-up from the very beginning. This says the Justice Department turned the Russia investigation into a puzzle never to be solved. It soon became apparent why the investigation was not reaching a swift conclusion. Well, why did it take 30 months? Why did it cost $40 million? Why did you need 2,800 subpoenas? Why 500 search warrants? It says here it became a way of keeping key facts hidden rather than getting to the bottom of anything. See, we've brought this point out before, and as has this author, by the way. It's not like we're the only ones. But the investigation itself was meant to cover up the truth. And you know how we know this? Because we haven't gotten to the truth of what actually happened until this sham of an investigation finally ended earlier this year. And then they investigated the investigators. And round one of that was the IG report from a few weeks ago. So now we're beginning to understand what really happened and how it was a setup from the beginning. And what they did. How they mistreated, how they violated the constitutional rights of ordinary Americans. The FBI, they're supposed to be there to protect those rights. It says here, Mueller was a figurehead. At the end of the probe that he supposedly supervised, he knew little about the report that bore his name. And you can go back and look at the highlights of his testimony on July 24th, earlier this year. What an embarrassment. For 2 years, all we heard, a year and a half, all we heard was that Mueller cannot be questioned. He was like God for 18 months. Or like the president. He was like the most powerful man in the United States for a year and a half. And then he testifies, following his report, he testifies in July of this year. And everyone, the whole world saw, he didn't even know what was going on. He didn't even know the content of his own report. The real masters were all of these left-wing attorneys in the Justice Department, like Weissman and others. All of these Democrat donors, political enemies, in other words, using government agencies, powerful government agencies, to go after their political opponents. That's what it amounts to. Well, it says here, finally, the business of the FBI is to protect and defend our Constitution. And how is business? The FBI is operating at a loss if the preservation of the Constitution is its objective. Listen to this. It quotes the Constitution. For some of you who are not Americans, this is taken right out of the U.S. Constitution. It says, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause. You have to show probable cause. You have to prove there's a real threat here. We've got some serious evidence. Supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. You've got to be very specific. This is what we're wanting to search or listen into. And it's for this, this, and this reason. Here's the evidence that we have, Judge. It's really condemning. He says here, this author, We know that the FBI violated its oath or affirmation in securing the Carter Page warrants. That's what each of those 17 quote-unquote mistakes noted by the Horowitz report is, a deception to gain a warrant. A warrant is only as valid as the truth of the information relied upon by the judge issuing it. You see, the integrity of the process, as we noted last week, it depends on the honesty and the transparency of the DOJ, the FBI. It depends on them telling the truth when they go before those FISA judges. And added to that, as Kim Strassel noted a few days ago, it depends on those 11 judges. It depends on them pushing back if they don't have probable cause. And we now know that the FISA judges never did that, did they? And they should have. And I can't believe there aren't more people, more commentators, criticizing or rebuking the FISA court. They've actually been praised here of late because they came out with their rebuke for the FBI. But that, like we had in a program a week or two ago, that's too little too late. Because the truth is, soon after that FBI case fell apart, there were enough whistleblowers. Devin Nunes was one of them. Mark Levin's foundation was another one. There's other, and Kim Strassel brings out in her piece that there were other evidence. There's other evidence that was put forward, that was put in front of the FISA judges, saying that, look, this is what the FBI is doing. But no, they just rubber stamped all those warrants to spy on Americans. President Trump on Sunday, he tweeted out, the Democrats and Hillary paid for and provided a fake dossier with phony information gotten from foreign sources, pushed it to the corrupt media and dirty cops, and have now been caught. They spied on my campaign and then tried to cover it up, just like Watergate, but bigger. Listen for a moment to this. This is the same interview, Andy McCabe and Wolf Blitzer. And this is Blitzer pointing out those 17 mistakes, inaccuracies, omissions in those FISA reapplications, all the problems of misconduct with the FBI. And here he's talking to the FBI deputy director at that time, working right underneath Jim Comey. Comey, remember, said it was just a little bit of sloppiness. And here's Andy McCabe's response to Blitzer asking him about mistakes he made. And you'll notice he right away changing, when he finally can figure out what to say, he changes it to we, not I. He didn't do anything wrong. But as an agency, here's what we could maybe do better. Clip 4.
What's the biggest mistake you made?
The biggest mistake we made. The biggest mistake, I think, is the process that was in place essentially left so much responsibility on the lowest level of FBI agents and supervisors involved in the process that once those mistakes are baked in, they become very, very hard for the many, many layers of oversight to uncover.
So that was his biggest mistake. It was the process in place that kind of baked in these policies at lower levels that kept all of these checks or these oversights from being able to find out the inaccuracies. He's blaming it on the process. He didn't do anything wrong. Jim Comey didn't do anything wrong. The people that were putting their signature on the FISA warrant applications, including Rod Rosenstein, you had all of the, it's the who's who of the Obama people. That's what it was. But he says it was the process. Listen to what William Barr said last week in his interview with Martha McCallum on this these layers, as he puts it. Clip 5.
As a director sitting on top of an organization of 38,000 people, you can't run an investigation that's 7 layers below you. You have to leave it to the career professionals to do.
Do you believe that?
No. I think that one of the problems with what happened was precisely that they pulled the investigation up to the executive floors, and it was run and bird-dogged by a very small group of very high-level officials. And the idea that this was seven layers below him is simply not true.
That's the current attorney general saying that Jim Comey, the former FBI director, is lying. He was over the FBI at the time. And so here's all of this evidence of wrongdoing. And Comey says, well, look, how can you blame me? I mean, there's 38,000 people in the agency. And, you know, you can't really expect me to run these investigations from on high when it's seven, eight layers down below. And Attorney General Barr says it's exactly the opposite. They took it from the lower agencies and brought it right up to the executive level. This was run by Jim Comey, Andy McCabe, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, and all of those people. And that's why you had Peter Strzok texting Lisa Page, coming out of a meeting from Andy McCabe's office, saying, look, I know we talked about the results of this upcoming election. There's no way that he can win, but if he does, we have to have an insurance policy. And then as soon as he won, they put that in motion. They certainly did. And the evidence is now coming in, 3 years on. 3 years after a long special counsel investigation that was intended to cover this up. That was the sole purpose of it. And now all this evidence turns up. And still, what's the biggest mistake you made? Well, I think the biggest mistake, I think, is when the process, you see. It was the process in place. It was a little bit of sloppiness, says Jim Comey. What a shame. Where's the repentance? Where's the admission of wrongdoing? And people would criticize them, and now, as the Attorney General said last week, then they use the agency for cover. They say, well, you can't criticize me. I mean, if you're criticizing me, you're saying there's something wrong with the FBI. And look, the FBI is a wonderful organization of 38,000 people. This is how William Barr addressed that. That last clip, obviously, was a clip of Comey, and then the interviewer talking or shifting it over to Attorney General Barr. Here's one last clip from that Fox interview, clip six.
One of the things that I object to is the tack being taken by Comey, which is to suggest that people who are criticizing or trying to get to the bottom of the misconduct are somehow attacking the FBI. I think that's nonsense. We're criticizing and concerned about misconduct by a few actors at the top of the FBI. And they should be criticized if they engaged in serious misconduct. That doesn't mean we're criticizing the FBI. And I think the tack of trying to wrap yourself in the institution and say, gee, people who are criticizing the decisions I made are attacking the institution. I notice people don't do that as far as I'm concerned. People feel free to criticize me, and I don't say, gee, you're attacking the honest men and women of the Department of Justice. Mm. I think leaders, you know, have to own their decisions and are fair game if they make bad decisions.
That's exactly right. Leaders have to own their decisions. There are actual signatures on those applications for FISA warrants. Top officials signing off on it. It's important for us to go back from time to time and to just appreciate how close this presidency, and by that the United States of America, was overthrown by this cabal, and before the presidency even got started. How close they came to destroying this president. But as we know, God didn't let that happen. Now we're 3 years into it, and we're beginning to learn the truth. And oh, by the way, as Powerline noted, just yesterday. This past year, 2019, is the year that Donald Trump completely took over the Republican Party. If you remember coming into his presidency, obviously the Democrats hated him for every reason. He had a lot of people in the Republican Party who despised him as well. He had a lot of people in the Republican Party who said they were never Trumpers, never would they support this president. But if we learned anything from the impeachment circus from the past few months, it is, and that the president, for his part, he's been tweeting this often and talking about it often, the unity in the Republican Party. Not one Republican voted for his impeachment. If anything, all that he said about Ukraine, there's still the occasional Washington Post piece, as I read earlier. But leave that aside, the one that's been hurt by the news about Ukraine, the one who's been hurt the most is the presidential candidate, Joe Biden, the former vice president. Powerline here is referring to this piece at 538. That's a website as well. But it quotes 538 as saying, in Trump's first 2 years, for example, then-Speaker Paul Ryan sometimes balked at the president's demands, angering the House Freedom Caucus. But Ryan's former number two, Representative Kevin McCarthy, we played a clip from him a few days ago. He's now the Speaker of the House. It says, and he's gone from Trump skeptic to fierce loyalist. The House Republicans are now essentially one big Freedom Caucus, aligning with the president on nearly every issue. So here he's been attacked relentlessly from the radical left. And the Republican Party has never been stronger. As I said, with respect to the rallies, the enthusiasm, the support has never been greater. It's astounding to look at this. To just step back and look at the bigger picture of what has happened. How that, as my father said, he said it before, how that all of these attacks, they're backfiring. They're backfiring. This article goes on to talk about the Senate. Again, coming into office in 2017, you had Susan Collins in the Senate. These are all Republicans. Bob Corker, Jeff Flake, John McCain, Lisa Murkowski, Ben Sasse. Sometimes angry critics of the president. Well, John McCain has since died. Jeff Flake resigned. Bob Corker, I think, is gone. There's just the two ladies, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski. And then Ben Sasse, he's coming up for re-election, and he's backed off of some of his criticism. Now, they have taken in Mitt Romney, and he's been pretty vocal in his criticism of President Trump, but the critics in the on the Republican side, the numbers are dwindling. And then it says here at Powerline, taking control of his own administration has proven more difficult for Trump than assuming control over congressional Republicans. However, Trump has made significant strides this year. And then it talks about some of the people in his own administration that he's gotten rid of, and they've been replaced. Attorney General Barr is a good example. Pompeo, I don't think Pompeo was this year, it was last year, but still, he's beginning to put people in place that really are serious about carrying out his agenda. And think of his agenda for a moment. Think of the economy. I know I've stressed the debt and how it's going to crush us eventually, but you have a spirit of optimism in the air. There was a story about shopping on Saturday. The biggest single day of shopping in American history. I'm sure a lot of it's been rung up on the credit cards, but still. The economy, the stock market. As I said at the top, using sanctions to pretty much bring to a screeching halt the Nord Stream 2 project, the pipeline project. We've talked before about the control of the Supreme Court. And all of those federal courts, the circuit judges, that have been appointed by Mitch McConnell's team in the Senate, They're all together carrying out President Trump's agenda. Over 90% approval rating within the Republican Party. So here comes this outsider. He's never been in politics. The Democrat side just hates him with a passion. Quite a few of the Republicans did before he was elected. He had it out with Ted Cruz. He had it out with Lindsey Graham. And just like with Kevin McCarthy, they're all fierce defenders now. If you think about what it says in the Saving America article, this resurgence, my father in talking about the history from 1 Kings or 2 Kings, I guess it would be, how that Israel became more powerful than at any time since the days of Solomon. Now, I don't know if it's going to be at that same level, because America sure had some power coming into World War II and even before that, really. But for a temporary period, a short time, there is a prophesied resurgence, and it's happened despite all of these attacks coming from every direction and going on for nearly 3 years. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.